Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Monday edition of The Drive, and yes, it is, in case you, can't even think of where, if you're a sports fan, you don't know what's going on. It is SEC Media Days up in Nashville, and Dan Peck is there on the scene. We will bring him in momentarily. Meanwhile, holding things down here in the studio, Bill, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com, and Drew running the controls. As we get things underway, day one of SEC Media Days, three coaches, the commissioner, quite a few players making their way around, and let's go ahead and check in up in Nashville. And Dan, how are things going on day one?
Busy first day, Bill. Great to hear from everybody back in the studio. But yeah, it's exciting. You know, a new location for the. For this edition of SEC Media Days. Never been in Nashville before with the event. Big turnout early. Commissioner Slive speaking to a packed house in the big room to open things up earlier today. We've heard from LSU, Texas A&M, and Missouri already. In fact, Commissioner Slive may taking the stage in the small room before the end of the hour, too. We might even be able to have some of that live, but a lot of great audio that we've been able to collect so far. Really exciting stuff, a great event, and this year's edition off to a great start.
Looks like a huge crowd once again, just from a couple of bits that I've been able to see.
Yes, tons of people are here. And, you know, Bill, but the difference between it being here in Nashville versus Atlanta last year in the College Football Hall of Fame, it was more spread out, a little too much so, I'd say, last year in Atlanta. This year, it's all on the same floor, and everything is right here. So a little congested, but I like it all being right here versus everything being so spread out.
The stars are out, though, Bill, because Barrett Salee is in front of me right now walking by the radio. He'll come by later. He doesn't need to – Hey, Jacob, I hate to do this to you, but I'm going to – that's Jacob Goins from On the Line. Jacob's doing great work. Don't miss On the Line 2 to 4 all week long here at SEC Media Days. Bill, I don't mean to jump right in, but it's Radio Row, right? You
sure.
Never know who's going to drop by.
Oh, yeah, if you can grab somebody, go ahead.
How about our usual Tuesday guest coming by and showing up a little bit early? How about our good buddy Barrett Salee from CBS Sports and Sirius XM, Bill? He just grabbed a headset.
So, Bill, I see they sent the better-looking version of the radio show to Nashville.
It's youth before whatever, I guess, is what the deal is here this time.
Something goes before the shovel, right, is how it's been explained to me.
I think that's
Bill.
How that works.
Yeah, really. So, Barrett, where's the karaoke spot this year?
I haven't had a chance. I drove in this morning, like, super early, so I haven't had a chance to scout it out because – I coached my son's 11U All-Star Tournament this weekend, and we got a ring. We also got in at about 8 o'clock last night, and I was exhausted. So I didn't get here until this morning.
That big stage they're setting up on Broadway, my understanding is that's the karaoke show tomorrow night that we're doing.
Isn't that like an actual like real
it
concert?
It is. Midland, isn't that the band? I think that's going to be playing.
Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
Is that for us, or is that just a normal night?
Well, what they're doing, and they're hoping, I think they're planning on doing it every year, is putting on a concert as part of Media Days. So it's sort of sponsored by the SEC and its sponsors, but I think it's for anyone who happens to be in the area.
I'm in. I'll go.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, Barrett, I mean, as much we could talk karaoke for 15 minutes, but this has been, exciting start to the event so far. Gotten here for the commissioner, a couple of the coaches in the league, a couple of the more interesting coaches in the league going into this season, defending SEC West champion Brian Kelly, Texas A&M's Jimbo Fisher, Eli just got done, Eli Drinkwitz from Missouri. What can you tell us about what you've seen and heard day one of SEC Media Days?
Well, if you're a Texas A&M fan, don't you have to be scared out of your mind right now when you hear your head coach who hired Bobby Petrino, who's been awful as a head as an offensive play caller, me, Jimbo Fisher, I'm saying, say that hopefully Bobby Petrino calls good plays. Hopefully. That is that's pretty scary because Texas A&M offense, it's been awful. It's been the reason they have not lived up to expectations. It's the reason Jimbo Fisher has not justified that $95 million contract. It's the reason that he was, air quote, told to go out and hire an offensive play caller. And yet, hopefully, is how you address it?
You know the dream, it's funny Bobby Petrino's involved because the similarity, the dream for A&M would be that this is Auburn 2004.
Exactly.
That you brought everyone back, changed the play calling.
And everything works.
And everything worked, and the coach went on to have great success.
Yeah.
Bobby Petrino was, in fact, Auburn's offensive coordinator 2002 and had a little bit of a role there in the unpleasantness at the end
really?
Of the 2003 season.
I think I remember something about
that. I don't know.
That.
J.G. Tate's around here somewhere. We can ask
him. I'm sure he has plenty of insight in it.
No, what do you think the chances are that A&M has that kind of breakthrough, having added Bobby Petrino to what is largely the same group that was struggling on the field last year?
I can't see it happening. I can't see it. Honestly, if you – here's the thing. What makes Bobby Petrino a good play caller now anyway? Yeah, he did it at lower levels. Great. Wonderful. The last time we saw him as a Power 5 coach was when he got smoked. I think it was by Georgia Tech. Was it by Georgia Tech?
You talking about that last season at Louisville?
Yeah.
It was
that next day that he got fired.
They weren't the worst Power 5 team his last year at Louisville.
They were close.
But they were in
they were really close.
They were in the argument to be the worst Power 5 team in America.
I think a lot's made of, genius offensive. What? No. Like, A, he might not be a genius anymore. And B, we know the personality, not just of Petrino, but also of Jimbo. That just doesn't seem like it's going to work all that well.
How much leeway does Jimbo Fisher have this year? Like, I mean, is this
$75 million worth of leeway?
Yeah, that's
because I think it's 76.8 if he gets fired after this season. I know there's a lot of oil money. There ain't that much oil money.
That amount would end the writer's strike. Like it's amazing. Like what kind of money we're talking about.
That is true.
And it's. And it's a brutal first seven games, like all things considered.
What are you going to do if you're Texas A&M, if you're Ross Bjork? You fire him and say, okay, a short-term revenue hit to try to get a long-term revenue gain? Long-term side. There's not really a good answer. So, I mean, do you try to negotiate a smaller buyout? I mean, why would you do that if you're Jimbo? So, it's not a situation.
That's a brief negotiation.
Yeah. Hey, do you want to take 40 instead of 70? No. Okay.
Yeah. What's your counter when Jimbo says no to that?
How about 50? We're going to get to 75. Instead of 76.8, we're going to get to 75.
Feels like the lack of leverage is crucial there. What do you think, Bill?
Yeah, I don't think that's very likely to happen. It is interesting. I think that you've got, of the three coaches there today, you've got one who, I mean, the immediate and the long-term future looks pretty darn good for Brian Kelly. The other two, I wonder if they're probably not on the two hottest seats in the SEC right now.
Yeah, I mean, and with Eli, the thing about it is, what did Missouri expect, right? He has a contract that is, you know, it doesn't warrant him, you know, having the pressure of success. It's $4 million. That's lower third of the SEC. So the idea that Eli has a ton of pressure, it's true because Missouri has had success in this league.
Mm-hmm.
But are you supposed to have success in Georgia's shadow in the SEC East? Who else are they going to get? And look, Bill, I'm not saying
no. I don't know who they would get.
Right. But who would? Yeah, I mean, if you're Missouri, don't you just kind of try to figure out how you build and build slowly? Because there really isn't another option at this point.
Thing is, it's tougher and tougher to build slowly these days.
I would wonder if anyone in the conference would have the luxury of being able to be patient with their coach. It would be a program like Missouri or other places that haven't, you know, whether you want to say historically or even in the last 10 years, you know, haven't really contended very often within the conference. So, you know, I would certainly hope that Eli's given more time to build something and try to do it without the pressures of, well, we're used to winning championships and you're not doing it, so we're going to replace you.
And I think Missouri's smart enough to do that. I think that unless they get a knock on their door and it's, I don't know, Bill Belichick, what are you going to do if you're Missouri? Don't you just kind of let it go?
Feels like it needs roll with it? It should be. The difference between A&M and Missouri would be that for Missouri, it feels like it needs to be undeniable that this is going in the wrong direction.
Yes.
And I feel like with A&M, you're seven games in.
Right.
If it's not clear, it's
the
going.
The bar's a little different.
If it's not clear, it's going in the right direction at A&M. You know, after seven games with that bye week after the Tennessee game, you look at that win-loss record, and you wonder if you need to write a $76 million check.
it's an interesting dichotomy between the two coaches here, but two of the coaches that are here today.
Yeah, Jimbo's got to win nine games. I didn't realize it was just 39 wins for Jimbo in 5 years. So he's got to win nine this year just to be averaging eight.
He's Kevin Sumlin. Ooh. Like seriously.
Absolutely.
You compare his record, I think he's actually two games worse
below.
Mm-hmm. Than Kevin Sumlin right now. And part of that was the Auburn game last year. I think that was the one that put him down two games.
Now with Sumlin, I think you had such a hot start, right? Yeah. You had the Manziel year, I think, was Sumlin's first year at A&M, and it sort of gradually devolved.
Yeah.
Jimbo, it sort of stayed more or less the same.
Except in the COVID year. We've talked about this 1,000 times. The COVID year, whether it's positive or negative, throw that out the window. It doesn't even matter.
Talking with Barrett Salih from CBS Sports and Sirius XM here on the Monday edition of The Drive, live from Radio Row. I'm here at Radio Row. Barrett's here with me. We got Bill back in the studio there in Auburn. Drew at the controls. Haven't talked any LSU with Barrett here, which is interesting. I mean, they're the reigning division champion. Brian Kelly went up first.
Mm-hmm.
They are expected. I think they're going to be picked to win the West, which it's been rare for anyone but Alabama to be picked to win the West in Nick Saban's tenure as Alabama head coach.
Right.
Jaden Daniels, last time I checked, is second only to Caleb Williams on current Heisman odds board. So, what do you have? What are you imagining LSU season looks like, Barrett?
Like you said, I don't think there's going to be any doubt that they're going to be picked to win the SEC West, and I think they should win the SEC West. When you look at what that team is, there's not really a question. You know, you have the stud quarterback. You've got five returning offensive linemen. You've got 94% of your rushing production coming back. You've got really good wide receivers, including the SEC leader in receptions, coming back. And then defensively, I don't think enough gets made of Mason Smith returning, because he went out with the injury in the Florida State game last year in the season opener, and suddenly some dude named Harold Perkins, I don't know if you heard of him, he came in and just blew the doors off of everybody. Well, Mason Smith's back. So that defense is going to look solid. So the one part of the roster that Brian Kelly was concerned about is the one that he addressed best in the transfer portal, and that's the secondary. So I think if you look at how these teams stack up to each other, there's no doubt that LSU is the most stable. Is the upside as high? I don't know, probably not, but there's no question mark.
And people made their, you know, this time last year, people were having their fun about the dancing and Brian Kelly's lack of an accent, you know, compared to other people in Louisiana, or a different accent. I don't say a lack of an accent,
yes,
but a different accent. I feel like all those jokes feel so old and passe now.
They are.
The notion that, how's Brian Kelly going to fit in? I don't know. They won the West.
The same way he did last year. It seemed to work out okay, so do it again.
So it's, I think that it makes sense for people to be bullish on LSU this year. Even if the thing I get nervous about is how many of those games were razor thin.
Yeah.
Last year, I mean, LSU was shockingly close to being 8-4 or 7-5 for a team that went 10-2 and won the SEC West.
They were also very close to be 11-1, and really a couple of dumb plays away from maybe beating Tennessee.
Not beating
Tennessee, but at least being in that game.
And it feels like in the NFL especially, we'll see teams where it's like, oh, they won all those close games last year, and then a year later, some of those games didn't break right.
Right.
LSU's improved a lot from that team that was winning those close games last year, and that's what makes me think, well, maybe those games aren't as close.
Yeah,
this season
they were a joke against Florida State. Like that would they remember how bad people were making fun of them after that loss, and how ridiculously bad that offense looked, and the fact that they looked like they hadn't practiced special teams at all, and then they won the SEC West.
Talking with Barrett Salee from CBS Sports and SiriusXM, and we've got some audio, by the way, from both A&M and LSU's coaches and some of the players they brought in. Auburn has come up. You know, some of the questions we were asking Brian Kelly, which, you know, I think it does relate to the situation Hugh Freeze steps into. First-year head coach having to, with experience, having to step in and take over something that had become a mess under the previous administration. He's got a major conference transfer portal quarterback coming in looking to compete, maybe starting. I mean, it's not a mirror image, and I don't want Auburn people thinking, well, you know, there's enough similarities. Anything less than 10-2 in a division championship.
No, Auburn hasn't recruited quite as well as LSU has had over the last few years.
A little different.
But there are some similarities between what Brian Kelly stepped into and the team he's going to take there on the field with a new quarterback, maybe, and the one that Auburn goes into this year with Hugh Freeze and maybe Peyton Thorne as the new quarterback.
Well, yeah, and I think with Auburn having, I think it's what, the fourth best transfer portal class, LSU last year, I think I had the best, but also they had 39 scholarship players going into the Brian Kelly era, which last time I checked is not the best plan to have moving forward. So, you know, some of that was quantity. It wasn't quality.
How many scholarship players on this roster were on last year's team, Bill? What are we up to?
Right at half of them.
43?
Yeah, right
so
at half.
So maybe it is exactly like LSU.
Yeah.
They get Alabama at home. So, no, I think that the similarities exist. But mostly because, you know, hey, if you have a coaching change and you have a program that has the upside of an LSU or Auburn and has fallen on hard times, you're going to revamp the roster like this. So, I think that the expectation should be a little different, obviously. But could Auburn go 8-4? Dan mentioned that there were a lot of close games for LSU last year. Could Auburn be playing in a lot of those close games and have a chance to win? Absolutely.
What do you expect from Hugh Freeze tomorrow? What do you think the reception's going to be like, and how do you think he's going to do?
Dude, there are going to be so many people asking about his personal stuff, and you guys know it as well as I do. He does not want to answer that. He will not answer that. He will have a canned response to that, and that is unfortunate because there are so many interesting storylines at Auburn that need to be addressed and should be discussed, and I don't think they will be, which sucks.
You know, Hugh Freeze, though, he does have some jiu-jitsu skills in this regard, where he can take what might be a question that could cause someone to stumble or have difficulty, and he can pivot that to something that ultimately makes him look good. And I don't think he's afraid of telling his story and acknowledging the adversity. Doesn't want to dwell on it. You know, doesn't want tomorrow to be all about why he was let go at Ole Miss. But I also think this is someone who relishes a chance to tell his story.
Yes.
And a question about why he was let go at Ole Miss does give him a chance to tell the redemption story or how he's changed or what he's learned.
Correct.
All that stuff that he has to acknowledge if he's going to be successful.
But there also will be a few people in our line of work who will not accept that, so to speak. So, but it'll be about quarterbacks. I mean, it'll be about Peyton Thorne. It'll be about his vision for the program, how he hits the transfer portal, things like that, which, you know, if we stay to that script, I will be very happy, because you mentioned the story he tells about, you know, his redemption and things like that. He also has, I think, a lot of stories to tell about how much this means to him and how much he's going to, I wouldn't say cherish, but how much he's going to enjoy having the chance to build this from scratch.
And I don't want to say it's unfair to ask about it, because it's not.
No, it's not unfair.
But, I mean, this is an industry full of people getting second and third chances. And I thought, you know,
it's also an industry of a lot of people doing what he got fired for.
It's true.
I
think someone picking Hugh Freeze to target with the knives or the razor blades or whatever at a press event, you know, it's not
hanging fruit.
Yeah. And there's in an industry full of guys who are trying to redeem themselves or try to ultimately change their story.
Yeah, and, you know, there is a positive for that, and I've said this for a long time, though. If coaches were banished for life for doing what Coach Hugh Freeze did, there wouldn't be coaches. Like, they wouldn't exist. That's just, it's sad, but it's the truth.
Barrett, tell everybody where they can find all the great stuff that you're going to be doing this week.
A lot of CBS Sports HQ. Whether it's myself or Josh Pate or Dennis Dodd, we're getting every single player, every single coach, the commissioner, we're getting John McDade, we're getting everybody. So check that out on CBS Sports HQ. Our coverage is nonstop from here, and then you can read stuff on the website and listen on SiriusXM.
Did I see Barton walking around? I could have sworn in a Vandy shirt, maybe. It seems like. I mean, that would be on brand.
Well, right. He is. He works for
Vandy. There's a reason.
I think I just saw him walk by you a minute ago. So you never know who you're going
to
see here at Radio Row.
I'm going to have to track him down then.
Absolutely. I'll see if I can. I'll see if I can find him for you. But yeah, Barrett Salih from CBS Sports. Thank you so much for joining us. Great stuff here in the segment of the drive live from Radio Row.
Yeah, we'll get to our first break. When we come back, we're going to get Brian to update us on Auburn football recruiting and Auburn baseball as they make more additions. Stick with us as we continue. Dan at SEC Media Days as we continue with the 7 hours from Nashville this week.
Whether you're a senior golfer or pro,
call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. It's Bill and Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the studio in Auburn with Drew at the controls. Dan is up in Nashville where day one of SEC Media Days is winding down, and he's in the process of rounding up some more guests there along Radio Row. While we've got a couple of minutes, so Brian, I mean, quite a bit going on here locally as Auburn picks up another football commitment for 2024.
Yeah, and I think Jalen Crawford is a terrific pickup. We got him at 6'1", 186. You watch his film, this guy's just a playmaker. Mm-hmm. He can get up and press the receiver and make plays that way. He can also play more of his own, and you can see him watching, you know, the quarterback's eyes and making plays. He just makes plays, interceptions, knocks passes away, causes fumbles, picks up fumbles, returns them for touchdowns. I just think he's a terrific player. I think he's versatile enough where he can come in and play cornerback or nickel.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. I mean, he looks like a guy that could play a couple of different spots.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, at 6'1", 186, you know, he could also be a cover safety, too.
Sure.
I mean, you got to have guys in the back end now that can cover and also, you know, step up and be physical in the run game. And I think Jalen can do all those things. You can also see him attacking the line of scrimmage in high school, and he does that well. So really, really good pickup. You know, you look at this class now, they've got a really strong class of defensive backs.
Secondary, so I was going to say, is really, I mean, they're off to a great start there. What is it, around 9 or so commitments now?
They're up to 11. I think it's 4 of them are defensive backs. 1, 2. Yeah, because.
Yeah, that's right. My bad.
Four of the 11 are defensive backs. You know, of course, they picked up Malik Blockton from over there in Pike Road last week, the first defensive line. You know, and I think the line of scrimmage is going to be big for this class, so they haven't really picked up but one of those guys yet. But you're going to see that change in the coming weeks and months for sure.
Yeah, now, so it's been, it's been since you were on last week. I was off last Monday. It's been since you were on that Auburn did officially add Blockton, Marcus Harris's younger brother.
And I see some Marcus Harris in him. I see some Marlon Davidson in him. Mm-hmm. You know, not that big yet, of course. But a guy who's got a pretty thick frame, and you can see that he's going to have a thicker frame. He's 6'3", 270, we've got him as, and can make plays. I mean, just is a really athletic guy at the line of scrimmage. I think he had 30-something tackles for loss, something like that, or maybe it was in the high 20s, a bunch of sacks. You know,
that's 7A.
Yeah, that's good football he's playing here in the state of Alabama. And a guy who just, you can see his motor runs pretty good too. I just think Malik can step in and play right away next year in the rotation and potentially be a starter by year two. That's how I sort of see his development there. And I think he's going to be a lot bigger than 270 by the time he gets to Auburn, and certainly by the time, you know, this time next year when they're asking him to step on the field.
Now, let's see. We're still a couple of weeks away from Big Cat,
yep,
which is coming up on the last Saturday in July. You think there could be any more movement before then?
Nothing off the top of my head. I can't think of anybody that's announced them before then that I think Auburn's going to get, but I could be wrong there. But they're at 11. I could easily see them at 12 to 14.
Yeah, where would they like to be when the, yeah, I was gonna, that's what I was going to ask. Where would they like to be when practice gets started?
I think around 12 to 14 would be good. 15 maybe before the start of the season, right? You know, they'd love to be at 20, but I don't see that occurring before the season starts. But this is in a much better position than they were a year ago.
No question about it. I mean, they're still going to have to use the transfer portal a little bit more this year probably than Hugh Freeze would like year in, year out, but maybe not quite as much as last year.
And the other thing that's interesting, and I haven't really asked about this yet, but, you know, without that 25 limit, you know, if they chose to, they could go with 30 high school signings.
Sure.
And just bring in maybe 10 or however many need more.
But you want to get as many guys that can help you right now as possible.
Yeah.
And if you're signing 30, the odds are you're not gonna find 15 freshmen that can really help you as much. So
I think it's gonna be around 20 and 15 ratio.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it'll be 25 and 10.
Yeah, because Auburn's a veteran team. I mean, they're sort of, I mean, I hate to say this, but I mean, an old team. Mm-hmm. A lot of juniors and seniors, a lot of upperclassmen on the team this year.
And, of course, a lot of the transfers they brought in are just one-year players. So that's going to give them a chance to reload again next year while they're also trying to build up from the bottom, too, because I think transfers can fill holes. They can make you more competitive, but they're not going to bring you all the way to the top competing with the Alabamas and Georgias and LSUs and Clemsons and Ohio States. You got to do that through high school football recruiting.
And then speaking of the transfer portal, big news for Auburn baseball as they continue. Butch Thompson continues to restock the Tigers.
Yeah, I don't remember if we talked about Javon Henderson, but that was that last week? I think it was last week.
I'm trying to remember exactly when that one was.
Yeah, I think it was early or mid last week, but he is the second baseman from Jacksonville State.
Right.
And he came from junior college. He was only there a year. Batted .397, 11 doubles, 3 triples, 7 home runs, 49 RBIs, and 11 of 12 stolen bases. I think he'll step right in and probably be Auburn's starting second baseman next year. He just, to me, looks like a dynamic player that can hit maybe lead off or second.
And Auburn really needed that. I mean, losing three middle infielders to the draft.
Yeah, and of course they got, I think it was Cooper Weiss, who was a terrific defensive shortstop who also has a lot of pop in his bat too. And then just a couple days ago, they added Derek Fabian, one of the top portal players from Florida. Now, his numbers at Florida won't blow you away, but he was one of the top players in the country.
Yeah, he was like Mr. Baseball in Florida a couple of years ago.
So his numbers in high school at North Marion High School, .462, 13 home runs, 5 triples, 8 doubles, 52 RBIs as a senior. His older brother, I think it's Judd, was a really good player at Florida, now was a second-round draft pick with the Orioles and now moving up in their system. So obviously he has that pedigree. Mm-hmm. And at Florida, last year he batted .289 in 22 games with a couple home runs, 10 RBIs, 5 stolen bases, no errors in those 22 games. I think that was at second.
Yeah, I believe it was. I know, but he's another middle infielder, so restocking there.
I believe he's going to get a strong look at third base. That's where I think he's going to fit in. He's a pretty big kid. And but, you know, at Florida, he got behind the All-American Kate Kirkland. If you watch the College World Series, you know who that is. That young kid who was just mashing. So that's understandable. But, you know, Fabian getting – it's kind of like I go back to, what is it, 30 years ago when who was it that left Auburn and went to Florida?
Oh, David Ross?
Yeah, David Ross, behind a really good player.
Right, behind Casey.
Yep. And went to Florida and had a great offensive year, and then went, of course, into the majors. Right. So, you know, maybe Fabian could do something like that.
Yeah, that'd be great. So big news there. Wanted to get you caught up there on those things locally. We're going to head back up to Nashville and Dan after our bottom of the hour break. Stick with us. Hey, you can join us on the Kia of Auburn hotline, 334-321-1390. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. They're the sponsor of our number one of the drive. And we'll be back with more of the Monday Drive.
Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive. Bill and Brian here in Auburn at the studio. Dan is up at SEC Media Days. It's day one there in Nashville. And let's see, we had three coaches, players from their schools, as LSU's Brian Kelly, You had Texas A&M with Jimbo Fisher and Eli Drinkwitz of Missouri, along with three players from each school. And things got started with Commissioner Greg Sankey. Have we got Dan back with us?
Yeah, I'm back here. We're working on Greg McElroy, and I were just chit-chatting a little bit during the commercial break. He's got another interview that he's committed to elsewhere on Radio Row. They're going to try to bring him back here if there's time.
Oh, is he? Does he have his own people scheduling things for him now?
Well, ESPN's got.
I know. I saw the format. I was going to give him some crap there for that. But Dan, did you get a chance to hear Sankey? Because I was interested. I got a chance to hear most of his comments earlier today, and I thought not surprised, but. He was pretty vocal about what has to be done to try to get NIL under control.
Yeah, I thought that the commissioner had a lot of really interesting things to say earlier today. It's not surprising that a lot of the remarks ended up being about NIL because that's such a big issue in college athletics today, and the SEC is at the forefront of this battle, and so he was forceful in desiring federal regulation to settle this, because it sounds like he's acknowledging that outside of some sort of federal solution, it's going to be difficult to get everyone on the same page with different state laws, with different laws allowing
conferences, different
yeah, within yeah. different conferences. I mean, it's and he made the point that we've seen the NCAA make too, which is while you don't want to. You don't want to prohibit opportunities from student athletes. You also want everyone playing college football to be following the same set of rules. And when state laws make different things legal on the recruiting trail or in the world of NIL, you have a situation where people aren't playing by the same sets of rules within the sport. And that is a very serious issue.
Oh, no question about it. I mean, he said there is an urgent need for Congress to do something about NIL. I mean, I feel like the bulk of what he said, but I was interested. He didn't seem like he had any interest at all in the SEC expanding from its 16 teams.
Yeah, I was only able to hear the opening remark, so I haven't gone back and heard some of the questions that the commissioner had once he opened the floor. He talked a little bit about this being the final SEC Media Days as a 14-team league.
Right.
Also confirmed the move of Media Days next year.
And you pointed out that's not the only thing that's going to be going on in Dallas at that time. I mean, I heard him comment on that. I didn't really look at the calendar to see if there was anything else going on.
Yeah, I mean, according to reports, next year's Major League Baseball All-Star Game will be Tuesday, July 16th at Arlington.
That's unbelievable.
And you've got, so there could very well be SEC Media Days and the Major League Baseball All-Star Game going
right in the middle of it.
The same week in the same city next summer. And I understand Dallas is a very big city. And Arlington aren't exactly the same area. But, no, you could have two very, very prominent sports events happening at the same time next year in Dallas, Texas. The SEC has announced the dates. I believe it's.
He said July 14th was the first day.
I think it's the same as it would be the same week, unless. I don't know if Major League Baseball has officially announced that date for next year's All-Star Game, or if that's just reports as to people assuming that's when it is. But we could be looking at a situation where next year's Media Days and next year's Major League Baseball All-Star Game and all the festivities around the All-Star Game.
Oh yeah, no kidding. I mean, Home Run Derby and all the other things that are going on at the same time. You'd probably have a lot of reporters splitting duties. If you got two representatives, one's going to be going, look, I got baseball at this time while you're over. You're going to listen to some of those guys.
Next year, Justin Ferguson could be the kid getting hit in the face by a line drive.
That's what they ought to do. Derby. They ought to put the media out there to shag those balls.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. There'd be so many injuries.
Or at least a media pen. Oh. Yeah, like a media section, and if the guy hits a home run in there, it's like extra points.
If he can hit one, it's going to be like dodgeball. Dodge baseball. Line them up along the infield, and they've got to be trying to run out of the way. And you get so many points for home runs, but you get extra points if you hit a line drive and knock out a media member.
Well, one of the
because I'm not going to be there.
One of the biggest pieces of news we got from the commissioner, was the location of next year's media days in Dallas, and I mean that would be an event in and of itself. But now it's going to be Texas's first media days taking place in Dallas, and Oklahoma will be there too. I mean, Bill, that's going to be. I mean, you were there when Saban debuted.
Oh, it's going to be crazy. You're right.
I mean, you were there when Fulmer got a subpoena. Right, like you've been at the you've been at the
good
craziest
old days.
Ones of these, yeah, and Texas and Oklahoma making their debuts at media days in Dallas, Texas. That's going to be unmissable.
Yeah, no question. Brian, do you have any thoughts on what Greg Sankey had to say today? I saw JG just in his thoughts about Greg Sankey. JG seemed to get the feeling that Sankey wanted to stick with an 8-game schedule. That's not the feeling I got when I was watching him. It seemed to me he laid out why it would be better to play a 9-game schedule than 8.
Right. I didn't listen to that part of his thing. I was running errands at the time, but I still feel pretty strongly that SEC is eventually going to move to 9-game schedules, as long as there's not some thing they find analytically where after going through it, in 2024 with the college football playoff, that somehow the 8-game schedule gives them an advantage over all the other conferences that play the 9-game, which I don't necessarily.
Yeah, it's hard for me to believe that would be the case. I mean, he did point out that if you're playing an 8-game schedule, you can only keep one conference opponent on a regular basis.
Right.
Whereas he said you could have up to 3 with a 9. See, that sort of brought out the way the Big Ten's doing it, where you don't necessarily have to play 3 teams every year. You could play some every year and others every other year, or something like that.
Kind of in balance with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the thing with the NIL stuff, it's just the NCAA has blown this and they've left it.
Well, yeah, Pandora's box is open. It can't be shut, and right. nobody who's really involved in it can do anything about it.
No, and I don't see any real movement. On the national level as far as politically doing anything yet. Maybe there's stuff behind the scenes that we don't know about,
I wonder what there could be to really force the hand. I mean, how are you going to force the hand of Congress? I mean, I just don't know.
It's just having influence or being able to convince the right people, the leadership of both parties to move on it. The problem is, I forget how he phrased it, but he was like, the informed student athletes don't want to be employees. Well, what does informed student athletes mean? Being informed by the SEC and their schools, what it means, right? Without actually speaking to maybe a lawyer or other people who might have a different view on what it means to be employee. So you still got a lot of those issues there. And I'm not sure this is going in the direction they want it to. To me, in the present state, the thing that Auburn and Alabama need to do, because it's being done in Texas, is they need to get the state law changed and allow them to tie seating and your ability to buy the best seats in Jordan-Hare
Stadium. Oh, yes.
Priority, seating priority to NIL, be able to tie those two together. They're able to do that at A&M now. They're able to do it in Texas because of state law. The state law also bans the NCAA from –
that part of it I don't know about, but I agree that I mean unless there is some decision or the conference, and that's the other thing he said. I mean, you'd have to have the only other way that could be done if the NCAA can't is conferences would all have to agree to certain parameters, and that's just the conferences aren't equal, and they're not going to.
And they're going to get sued immediately once they do. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
I do wonder if we're going to run into a situation where a conference or the NCAA wants to pursue something in violation of state law somewhere, and what exactly that would, because I'm not sure what the legal argument is going to be if state law shields you from the conference doing something, because if it's against conference law, I'm not sure state law necessarily overrules that, but we also have to see someone try that. We have to see someone actually attempt to go after a school for doing something that's legal under state law but illegal under SEC or NCAA regulations, and how exactly that would be settled if that came to pass.
I wonder who would be the most likely
to try something.
I mean,
like
the
that.
SEC is not going to go after Texas A&M or Texas, right? I mean, they just invited Texas.
Those
back.
Are the two big dogs that could. I mean,
but the conference, the SEC conference, is not going to do that. You know, they're going to just, you know, allow the state legislatures to do whatever they're going to do and just, you know, run the conference to make as much money as possible. You don't make money by going after one of your own schools. What the NCAA can and cannot do, I don't know. They seem to be really, what's the way I can describe it without being crude? But they seem
helpless?
To be.
Helpless?
Yeah.
You want to go helpless?
Yeah. I mean, they have no bite whatsoever.
Yeah, no power.
Nope.
You're right. So,
defanged,
yeah.
If you if you will.
Yep. I tell you what, let's get to our final break here of hour number one.
Tell you what, guys, we got a lot of great stuff. I was in the small room all day, a lot of great stuff. I got to ask Jimbo a couple questions, got to ask Brian Kelly a couple of questions, got some stuff from Jaden Daniels as well, LSU quarterback.
Sure. Let's run whatever you got. Okay. All right.
All right. We'll do some of that before the show's over.
We'll be right back with more SEC Media Days in Nashville here on The Drive.
Free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment of hour number one of The Drive here on this Monday. Bill, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the studio in Auburn. Dan is up in Nashville, day one of SEC Media Days. Dan, we got about 3 minutes or so to go here in hour number one. Have you got some audio that we could hear from some of the participants today?
I tell you what, we can do that. We got Doug Amos just sat down. Doug, can you hang out through for the start of hour number two?
If
you can. All right, Doug, because Doug just watched the commissioner in the small room, so we should have some Doug Amos when we come back. You want to hear from you know what, Bill? I actually kind of want to run. Let's see if I can get this to work because for a couple of reasons. But Anaya Smith opened his statement. Texas A&M wide receiver Anaya Smith opened his statement with a tribute to Terry Price before I got to talk to him. And I thought that'd be a cool thing to run for folks. So here's let's make sure I can get this to work.
I just want to say thank you all for having me. I'm very blessed and honored to be here. But I do want to give a special shout out to Coach Terry Price doing this for you. You know what I'm saying? We're going to keep balling, keep going hard for you, and just praying and hoping that you're watching over us.
Okay. We'll open up the questions. Anybody have something? Right here on your left-hand side.
Dan Peck, ESPN 106.7 in Auburn. Much love for Terry Price in Auburn as well. He's got a lot of friends there. What can you tell us about how the offense is progressing this offseason, what you've seen with the changes they've made in the last few months?
One thing I'll definitely say is Coach Petrino has come in and, you know, sparked the energy, sparked some light in us, opened up the playbook a little bit more. Not going to speak too much on scheme-wise, but it's very exciting, let's just say so, the least, for sure.
That was Texas A&M wide receiver Anaya Smith sharing a little bit about how the offense has changed with Bobby Petrino's arrival.
He is such a dynamic player. That was a huge loss for them last year, losing him.
Yeah, and somebody who later on in his press conference went into detail about his decision to come back and whether or not he was going to play NFL football or even go into the portal and try to find a different situation this year. And you know, he spoke a lot about the factors that led him to return to Texas A&M, including a real belief that they can be considerably better on the field this year than they were last year, and he could leave it in a better situation than had he left after last season.
Well, I mean, that's what everybody wants to see. Are they? I mean, there's no question they have folks that have been around very successful offenses in Jimbo in the past, and Bobby Petrino. Just are they going to be able to mesh? Can they work together?
And you just wonder if their systems have kind of
Are they
gone.
Outdated?
Yeah, a little bit. Maybe.
Yeah, we will. Yeah, we'll find. It's going to be really interesting to watch. I mean, it could be something. I think it's going to be entertaining regardless. Yeah. However it goes,
yes.
It's going to be something to watch. We're just about out of time here for hour number one of The Drive. Again, Dan up in Nashville for day one of SEC Media Days. Bill and Brian here in Auburn. We'll get to our top of the hour break. Hey, you can join in as well on the Kia of Auburn hotline, 334-321-1390. Stick with us. We're halfway done on the Monday Drive.
Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Monday Drive. Bill, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com, anchoring things from the Auburn studio. Our remote setup is in Nashville, where day one of SEC Media Days got underway earlier today. And our own Dan Peck is there in Music City. Dan, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, Bill. I neglected to mention the outstanding sponsors that are keeping us in Nashville this week, and I would be remiss not to say thank
you. Yes,
you
would.
To our friends at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. Tim Jones Farmers Insurance. Tim Jones has been serving the community as a farmer's agent over 30 years. As you prepare for whatever's down the road, he's here to help. And Wickles Pickles. Bill, I know I don't need to say all that much about our friends at Wickles Pickles, the South's best pickles, 90 years in the making. Get wicked with Wickles Pickles.
Absolutely. We really appreciate those folks making it possible for us to be broadcasting live from Nashville throughout the week, today through Thursday, SEC Media Days. You mentioned the Orthopedic Clinic. Hey, they're the sponsor of hour number two every day of The Drive. The Orthopedic Clinic, you mentioned locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. We'd also welcome your phone calls. You can give us a call on the Kia of Auburn hotline. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. And the number to get you through is 334-321-1390. You still got Doug there with you?
Doug Amos from the Max Roundtable, who started our 7 hours of live coverage of Media Days earlier today. Nice enough to give us a couple of minutes before he calls it an afternoon from here on Radio Row. Doug, what do you think of our first day of Media Days so far?
It's been fun, man. We had Jacob on for a little while, you on for a little while, 7 full hours. And, Bill, you'd have to tell me, you guys back in Auburn would have to tell if we did a good enough job of making it sound different with different approaches, because 7 hours in a row is – a lot of Media Day coverage, William.
It is, but the good thing is there are different people rolling through all the time, so it's not the same, you know, like 12 sound bites that everybody's running all day and all night. Doug, you got to be feeling great. It's usually this time of day you would be dead, but it's your first Monday in how long that you didn't have to get up way before dawn.
I mean, I'm not counting, Bill, but 78 weeks to be exact.
Yeah, nothing like a year and 18 months, huh? Man. So you're probably, I mean, you're feeling like it's mid-morning or something right now. I mean, late morning.
Guess what time I woke up for the first time today? The first time I woke up.
Probably.
Were you back on
2:45.
1:56.
Oh, man.
Oh man.
I wake up at 1:56 a lot of mornings, too, but it's not intentional,
exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. You got to make a trip to
the
restroom.
Sadly.
I go out at 1:55.
Yeah, Dan's just thinking about getting in sometimes
exactly.
At that time. Hey, Doug, I wanted to get your thoughts on, and I know you ran a good bit of Greg Sankey's comments. I've had a couple of people with differing opinions, and I know we've talked about this an awful lot, about, you know, the SEC is on a one-year deal after this season, the 2024 season, we know is an 8-game schedule with the move to 16 teams with Texas and Oklahoma coming in. As I watched Greg Sankey today, I didn't get the feeling that he wanted to stick with 8, but a couple of people that watched that think that could be the case. Do you have a feel for what the commissioner would like?
It's bizarre because I just asked him the question, Bill, in
the electronic media
room. And he will be live right here on ESPN 106.7 tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock. So he'll be joining my show first thing out of the gate tomorrow. I asked him that exact thing. I used the term bridge schedule because that's what they used the last time. He didn't care for that term. He said that's not what this is. He said, we will determine whether we're going to stay 8 or go 9. But you can always read between the lines with him, I believe.
Mm-hmm. I believe so, too.
And it's my belief that he wants 9. I've still stand by, Dan and Bill, the fact that at the SEC basketball tournament, which I attended and which I asked him about then, he thought at that point in March that it was going to be 9. At like almost without saying it, guaranteed it would be 9. So I think he left spring meetings very disappointed, and I feel almost assured that it's going to go to 9 because Texas and Oklahoma are both going to vote for 9.
And I wonder where that could ultimately, when or where. I mean, maybe a year from now at Media Days in Dallas, you know, something more official could come. Maybe this is a negotiation stance, right? You know, possibly this could be this could feature Greg Sankey needing to negotiate more with the SEC or with the ESPN. Before something like this can be made official. But no, I also I know what Doug means, and I think you're on the right track,
yeah.
Doug. I agree.
I pretty much, and let me just tell you all this. I had a conversation off the record. Well, let's just say off the stage with Paul Feinbaum earlier today, and he thinks the commissioner messed up a little bit by going for 25, 30 minutes this morning about nothing that had to do with SEC Media Days. Now, and some of the audio that you're referring to that I played on my show, Bill, was some of that.
Yeah,
and
mostly NIL. That's pretty much what he talked about.
But the first 15 minutes had nothing to do with football.
No, I sort of enjoyed it. I tell you what, he is a good speaker, and
he really is.
He didn't appear to be, you know, he wasn't really looking at notes or anything. He's very comfortable at filling a good amount of time.
And I thought the tribute for the folks who didn't see,
pretty cool.
Yeah, the tribute to the police officers,
yep.
who ended the Covenant school shooting was a really nice moment in the conference. And you know, he even acknowledged not really protocol for the reporters to applaud in this situation,
right.
But that was one where I think it was entirely appropriate.
And he's inviting them all back to the SEC tournament in March of 2024, mm-hmm. which I think is pretty cool too.
What did you think of what the commissioner had to say, Bill? Was there an issue you were hoping he would have?
No, not really. I mean, I didn't expect him to give us any more details, or you know, I knew he'd talk about how well the SEC has done in all sports, which he did, and how the SEC is a champion in everything, and adding Texas and Oklahoma. I was struck a little bit by that when he was asked a question about expanding, he almost bristled a little bit. It's like, we are a super conference, and 16 appears to be a perfect number. I agree with him there. I mean, you get more than 16, it's a whole lot more difficult to schedule in any sport.
And if he answers that question any other way, it overshadows everything else.
You're right.
That happens today, because if Greg Sankey says, 20 seems cool.
Exactly.
Like suddenly the
then everybody's going crazy.
Yeah, everybody in college football is wondering who those other four schools are going to be.
Let me tell you what question, guys, that he ran from like a deer. The last question in the electronic media room was a young man that wanted to know that with all the TV contracts and all the money, when would revenue sharing begin? Hmm. With the student athletes,
yeah.
And he literally was going, well, I got a spot right there on my shirt. He didn't any more want to go there than he wanted to go jump into the construction work outside the Grand Hyatt here.
Well, that's something, again, as he urged Congress to get involved in NIL, I'm sure he would love them to go ahead and get involved and not move it any closer to it being the employer, employee, and revenue sharing.
No doubt.
So Doug, I'd like to know, tomorrow we've got Auburn going, Hugh Freeze making his debut as Auburn head coach here at SEC Media Days. What are you expecting from Coach Freeze? It's not going to be his first Media Days, or even his first.
It'll be the first one since a lot of stuff happened, though.
That's correct. But a lot of water under the bridge since then, too. And I think we all in the league probably have a different, or at least most programs in the league have a different feeling about Hugh Freeze now than they did then. So I think he has been exceptional in press conferences he's had at Auburn since day one. I suspect he will be equally exceptional tomorrow. I think people there here covering Auburn will feel good after he makes his presentation in the main room tomorrow. I fully believe that. I think he is a humble man today, much more humble than he was when he was in Oxford. And I look forward to hearing from him. I think it'll be a neat thing. Now, I got to tell y'all, and I know Brian and Bill and you and Dan know this Auburn football team a lot more than I do, but these three guys coming, I'm going to need to find out a little bit about them, a little research prior to they get up there.
Yeah, Brian, I haven't had a chance to talk with you about this. What do you think about Hugh's selection of the three representatives for Auburn?
I think he just chose leadership and buy-in, right? These are the kids that have paid the price during practice, off the field. He feels like they're going to go to Auburn and speak highly of his system, what they've accomplished over the last, 8 months or so, and just really represent the program well. Luke Deal is a kid that's played a lot and will play a lot as a senior this year for sure, a tight end.
None of the three are assured of being starters.
Cameron Stutz.
They'll all three play, though, I think, a good bit.
Which is sort of why I keep thinking it's
four or five guys. Sorry. It's different when you're
When you can't see
them. Yeah. I'd say Stutz is one of four or five guys competing for two guard spots. And then Elijah McAllister is one of five newcomers at that Jack linebacker position, which is that edge rushing position. So there's going to be some great competition for at least two of those guys for sure.
Yeah, I don't want to undersell any of the players Auburn brought, but it's clear that Hugh Freeze valued more than just perceived value on the field, because I think if people were making a list of who seemed like Auburn's most important players on the field this fall, these three guys may not have been near the top of that list. But with a brand new roster and a new coaching staff dealing with a roster where half of these guys weren't on the team last year, like you said, it's buy-in and it's doing the right things in the limited opportunity that Hugh Freeze has had to make this decision.
Doug, before you have to run, what's always interesting to me at these things, I mean, it's usually not the coaches as much as it is the players. Just wondered who you and Dan had a chance to hear, and of the guys today, anyone that maybe surprised you or that you're glad you got a chance to hear?
To be honest with you, not really for me, Bill. I don't mind just coming right out and being honest with you. Nothing really stood out to me. Anaya Smith did, and Dan's already addressed that with his tribute to the former Auburn assistant coach. When he passed away, a Texas A&M assistant coach. I thought that was really cool. And, for me, the story of the day is kind of how Jimbo handled talking about Bobby Petrino. And I've talked to a lot of A&M people today, guys, and they believe wholeheartedly that this is an incredibly important year for him.
Oh, I agree.
We know they've got talent. We know they can be good, but we've been hearing that for a bunch of years now. I think it's about time it happened on the field, or somebody's probably going to pull $70 million out of their pocket and send him on his way.
I thought Jaden Daniels was very impressive. He's one of the more charismatic guys in the league, and he's coming in very confident after the season LSU just had. So I thought he really performed well. And like you said, we singled out Anaya Smith earlier for the Texas A&M, for a tribute to Terry Price. Both of the coaches, I mean, all three of the coaches, but especially Jimbo and Brian Kelly, I mean, these are guys who have been through the car wash before. Yeah. It's not their first rodeo, and so they know what to say, and I think more importantly what not to say in response to certain things. But I was, and maybe it's because we were talking with Barrett Salee in the first hour, Doug, and I see similarities between the situation Brian Kelly stepped into and the situation Jaden Daniels stepped into. And the situation that Hugh Freeze finds himself in now, and maybe Peyton Thorne in that regard. So asking, and we were able to ask both Kelly and Daniels, not compare your situation to Auburn, But just tell us what it was like, because that's maybe a map for Auburn to find a way out of what happened. We can run some of that later, because I thought Brian Kelly talking about the adjustments he had to make and Jaden Daniels talking about the adjustments he had to make as a veteran transfer portal quarterback winning over a new team. I thought there were some really interesting
Bill,
stuff.
Bill, I want to leave this, and then I am going to head on.
All right.
The best news I heard today was Dallas next year for SEC Media Days. I've already got a call into Witten there at the Auburn Network. I think NetJets needs to be contacted. I think Brian Matthews needs to join us. We need to all head to Dallas for
– I'm ready.
Hey, Dan, Dan, have you mentioned to Doug what we were talking about a while ago?
What else is going on? So the SEC is going to be in Dallas next year, and we can announce officially that Doug Amos will be in next year's Home Run Derby, which is, I mean, a shocking announcement.
He's going to be placed at second base for the Home Run Derby.
Exactly. And might get one. And Witten has just texted me, not going to happen, Doug. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, the Major League All-Star Games is that same week next week in Arlington. Yeah.
We had on, the communications guy from the SEC. I'm drawing a blank.
Chuck Dunlap was on my program,
right? About when you were. And Dunlap said that they're going to try to work out a deal where the Monday night little hospitality.
Is it the Home Run Derby?
Is that the home?
Oh, there you go. I got to go now. I got to go.
We're going, man.
Doug, we were saying a while ago, they're probably going to have to pull the kids out of the outfield after what we saw happen this year. It's going to be the media in the outfield next year shagging.
Yes.
That's right. We're going to be shagging fly balls at the Home Run Derby next year.
No doubt.
Cannot wait. We got Barry McKnight over there.
He had to kick somebody off his table.
Barry just rolled in.
Very sad thing.
They're going to have extra trainers out there to take care of us.
You're not kidding about that.
This is going to be a
Barry is apparently a great batting practice pitcher because, you know, his brother hit a home run out of where?
Three different places.
Wrote a story for Sports Illustrated. Barry's brother, who's a sports writer.
Right.
Trained to hit home runs and batting practice pitching out of three different ballparks.
That is true. With the batting practice pitcher for the Dodgers.
Yeah.
This is after he also wrote an article at the age of 44 when he learned how to dunk for the first time. Yeah. So.
Well,
how do you learn how to dunk for the first time? Did he learn how to jump for the first time?
I asked him, can you do it now? He looked at me like I had a horn going in the middle of my forehead.
Oh, Barry, how you doing, man?
Barry McKnight, everybody.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Primo spot, fellas, once again.
The silk voice of Barry McKnight.
Yeah, I want to assure people that was not my impression of Barry.
If it was, that's the best one you've ever done, Peck.
I've heard the other one, too, and it sounds better than I do.
Yeah, really.
Hey, Bill, it's good to talk to you and Brian. Y'all be good.
Oh, man, miss seeing you guys. That's the thing I miss most about not being there. I could get by without the coaches and the players. Just seeing some of the folks you don't get to see on a daily basis.
Yeah, Barry's got the table next to us here at Media Days. Just rolled in during the first hour of the drive for the next couple of days. Looking forward to that. Might have another Barry McKnight appearance in us before the week is over. I tell you, I mean, we got Do you want to run a little audio before we take a break, or do we need to get
We need to get to break. It's about 20 after, so we'll get to break,
cool.
And then we'll be back some more. Yeah, stick with us.
Very cool.
Day one, SEC Media Days. Dan is up there, Bill and Brian here in the studio. Love for you to join in as well here on the Monday Drive.
Easy, quick, stress-free, all words you probably don't think of when buying a vehicle. Unless, of course, you've shopped.
On The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Yes, that's some of the results of my mother having been an English teacher. 334-321-1390, that's the Kia of Auburn hotline. And Dan is up in Nashville. Before we get back to him, though, Brian wanted to give you a chance, talk a little bit about auburnsports.com, what all's going on. You've got folks here and there as well.
Stoltz
and you're heading up.
Yeah, Stoltz is already there. I'm going to leave early in the morning and drive up there for U-Freeze tomorrow and have plenty of coverage on that all day. And, you know, we'll get together for our rundown on Wednesday instead of Tuesday because we'll be busy Tuesday.
Sure.
And we'll just continue to cover SEC Media Days, updating all the different coaches and such when they speak. And, you know, just rolling into now the start of fall camp is next. And, of course, before that, I guess it's around, 11 more days or so, will be Big Cat Weekend, which will be a big recruiting
right.
event.
Yeah, the 29th, I believe, is Big Cat. So, great stuff as always there, auburnsports.com.
Right on. And you can also you can sign up at auburnsports.com free on online trial. And you can also follow me on Twitter and now Threads at BMATAU.
All right, as we said, Dan up in Nashville, you can tell. I mean, man, all kinds of folks. I like the way it sounds like it's set up this year. Jacob was talking about it earlier, and the fact that it's not as spread out. It doesn't sound like. Sounds like everybody's right there in the same area.
I mean, yeah, the two electronic media or the two big rooms are just outside Radio Row, as opposed to last year. When they were in different buildings, and you had to walk from one of the two press conference rooms, you know, into from the hotel to the College Hall of Fame to get to Radio Row. This year, it's a little bit different as they've moved everything onto the same floor. There are some other things going on the, you know, the other floors of the hotel, but it's been, I think so far it's a really cool event, and with Auburn and Georgia tomorrow. With Alabama on Wednesday and with Tennessee on Thursday, I don't think it's going to get quiet anytime soon, Bill. I think it's going to be pretty busy and pretty active here on Radio Row in Nashville.
So, who do you have some audio that we can hear?
Yeah, so you know what you want to hear Jimbo Fisher's answer to when he was asked about going into a season on the hot seat.
Oh yeah, I think that would be good.
I thought that was a cool question, and he gave an answer that some folks would, some folks may roll their eyes a little bit at how he. Actually, let's. Did I just lose internet? Okay, one moment, guys.
And that's fine. Jimbo had to expect coming in. He was going to be asked something like that. I don't think he expected. Brian, did you hear? I don't think he expected to be asked about the recruitment of Cam Coleman.
No, that was – I mean,
that was an inexperienced reporter or someone who's just trying to get him to say something, but Jimbo knows better than that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you can't talk about players until they have signed.
Yeah, I felt bad for that young person.
Yeah.
I believe, and I don't want to single anybody, I think it may have happened in both rooms where there was a
serious?
Cam Coleman. I think so because in the smaller room it was a female reporter, and I'm under the impression there was in the big room.
It was a young man in the big room
about it. Yeah. So in fact, maybe it wasn't.
Maybe they worked for the same organization, and that's just something they really wanted to try to find out when they came.
Yeah, disappointing for sure because Jimbo had. He had a lot of stuff to answer, and that was sort of cast a pall over the over what was going on. Guys,
I have something to say about Cam Coleman real quick. I don't think his recruitment is done with, and I think Auburn is going to continue to pursue him, and I would not rule out a flip, and you know, sometime in the future we'll see.
I'm running into technical issues on my end, guys. Fill a little time for me.
Okay, well that's fine. I'll tell you what we can do. We can go ahead and get to our bottom of the hour break. We're close enough to it. We'll go ahead and do that, see if Dan can get that straightened out. Hey, you never know who he's going to grab, never know who's going to stop in. You can join us, though. It's all you have to do. Just give us a call, 334-321-1390, as we continue here on the Monday Drive.
AU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Monday afternoon. Bill, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com with Drew at the controls here in the studio in Auburn. Dan is up in Nashville at the Grand Hyatt where SEC Media Days winding down for at least as far as the guests there. I mean, the coaches and players coming in. All right, Dan, one thing that that's always interesting. Look, the coaches, they've got to be good sales folks. They do. I mean, seems like every year there's some people that are just wowed by a coach or two. Well,
if a coach can't come in and sell, he's not going to be able to go into homes and sell recruits. So,
right.
So coaches had better be able to sell. Some of them don't have to as much. I mean, Nick Saban doesn't really have to sell anything to the media. Kirby doesn't really need to now. Brian Kelly seems so much more comfortable today.
He does.
But I can see, I mean, where he would be impressive coming in. Of the coaches and players that you've had a chance to hear today, Dan, are there any of them that you think, wow, maybe they're a little better than I thought? You have to sort of sit back and go, all right, take it with a grain of salt. But is there anybody who you think maybe they're a little better, or maybe they're not going to be as good as I thought? And we've only had three teams so far today.
It was A&M, it was LSU.
And Missouri.
I thought that Brian Kelly was really, really confident in his team.
I think he feels really like they're going to be pretty good.
And Brian Kelly doesn't strike me as a coach that likes to brag about his team. He likes to be more old school. Maybe mm-hmm. I'm reading it wrong, but that's just the feeling I got. And I also think Jimbo was happy with his team, but I'm just not buying it.
You know, Brian Kelly is somebody who's familiar with fans having lofty expectations of his teams.
Yeah.
Right? Like that's absolutely something yep. that wasn't new to him when he arrived at LSU. And so I think he knows that you got to be careful with your optimism right now, because if you paint a really rosy picture and six games in, that's not what the team looks like. You know, people aren't going to, you know, it's only going to make things worse, right? You can make things worse by talking up a team that maybe doesn't have the horses to back it up. So, yeah, I came away, I already thought LSU was going to be pretty good. I didn't hear anything today that made me think, oh, well this is something I need to reconsider about this team. People have been focusing on the two quarterback thing. That was a direct answer from Brian Kelly to a question about whether or not.
Oh, yeah. It's Jaden Daniels. Who's your starting quarterback? It's like, no, Jaden Daniels is. You know, the answer I liked? The one I liked was when he was asked about his accent. And he came back and was, wasn't smarmy or smarty about it or anything. He goes, well, you know, I think my accent's got a little better, but, but you know, it's a little different when I'm in North Louisiana. But when I'm in Lake Charles, it's got to be a little different. So, I mean, he's much more comfortable. There's no question about that.
Yeah, and I mean, and a 10-win season in year one will do that for you, won't it? I mean, that really is where, I mean, if Brian Kelly had Billy Napier's first year, at LSU, like I don't know if he'd be as confident or as comfortable.
No, that wouldn't have been a fun question to ask or expect the answer back from.
Right, but instead, Brian Kelly gets to come to media days as the champion of the of the Western Division at the moment, and that team is there aren't very many with more talent right now on paper than LSU, and so I think he has every reason to be confident about his situation going into year two. Hey, I think I fixed it. You want to hear Jimbo's answer to the hot seat question?
Oh, I'd love to.
Let me see. All right, I think this should work. Let's try this out, guys.
Jimbo, when you hear the words hot seat associated with your name, mm-hmm. does that challenge you, or does it kind of tick you off? Because your body of work is really good.
No, I don't. I mean, you say hot seat. My own not having success motivates me more. I say this from within. Coaches put more pressure and are more competitive than anybody else out there that does it. What you say, how you say, that doesn't affect us. We don't listen to it. You can't. Those are things that don't matter to us. We know what we have to do and how we have to do it. But if you want to have success for your players, two, the people who work for you, and three, your fans, that those people that support you, and A&M's done that way. And you put that own pressure upon yourself to go. Because you don't ever like to fail. My buddy, I was at home this summer, and he said something happened. We were actually throwing a cornhole. He said, and they were beating us. They were beating me and my son. And we were playing best out of three, and they won the Sun. They were up 11 or 12 to nothing in the second game. And he said, now, we're going to have to play till you win like we did since you were 3 years old, where you had to sit there and play till you won. You wouldn't leave till you won the game somehow, some way. I said, no, we're going to win it now. We come back and beat them, then beat them the second game. We're down. We made a heck of a comeback. But my point was, that's always in us as coaches and players. you know, that competitive, whether you say hot seat, whether you don't say hot seat, I don't pay attention. You don't pay attention. You can't. You got to go what makes you successful. And anytime I lose one game, I don't care if you're 11-1, 12-1, whatever it is, that drives you to have success. You want perfection. We're here to have perfection each and every day and who you are as a person and what you want for your kids and get them to understand that. So, I mean, does it matter? It doesn't matter, and I'm not trying to brush it off, but at the same time, I put that up on myself. I'm on a hot seat when we're 10-0. I don't feel any different whether you're 1-3 or 10-0 when I go into a game and how you prepare and how you look at it. I really don't. I know that sounds, people don't believe that, but that's a fact.
That was Texas A&M quarterback, or Texas A&M head coach Jimbo Fisher answering a question about how he perceives his job security or whether or not he feels any extra pressure going into the year on the hot seat. And, you know, I believe him. I mean, this is a guy who, I mean, there's pressure in having to defend a national championship, right? There's pressure in having to succeed a legend like Bobby Bowden or turn around a Texas A&M program. So, I mean, there's pressure for this year. But if you told me Jimbo's not feeling extra pressure because of some of the other situations he's found himself in before, I'd buy it.
For right now, I do. I mean, I agree. I mean, we'll see. Lose a couple of ball games early, have the offense not click, and we'll see how he's talking about Bobby Petrino and you know how everything else is going. But yeah, right now, he'd better be, you know, fairly cool right now.
Yeah, I mean, look at their schedule yet. Let's see here.
They've got a chance of losing a game or two.
At Miami game two.
And at Miami, Arkansas, Auburn, Alabama, and Tennessee, I believe, are five of the first seven for A&M this year.
Yep.
And I believe those are all before the bye week. So, I mean, it is not an easy first seven games. And they're going to be in a position where they probably need their answer for next year at the end of the Tennessee game, right? Because you don't want to be making a decision late in the year about whether or not to keep your coach or reshuffle and try things with a new coach. So, I mean, there's...
I think they'll have an answer. I mean, if they get off to a great start, then they know. If they get off to a terrible start, then maybe they can go ahead and do something in plenty of time.
If they get off to a terrible start, maybe they know.
Right.
Maybe they know the answer in that case, too. And so it's a it's one of the more interesting Texas A&M seasons in recent memory because there is that, even if he's not feeling it, there's that pressure on this experiment to work, and this is the year you need to see it.
334-321-1390, that's the Kia of Auburn hotline, and let's get to it, and Anthony is up. Hey, Anthony.
Hey, guys, how you guys doing?
Doing fine.
Man, I tell you, it's almost here. Anytime you get me, the day's kicked off. It's just around the corner before we'll get the first kickoff. But, you know, Jimbo took like a whole year to go around the world to answer that question. But I tell you right now, this is not little league football or some kind of pickup game that he alluded to that his son played in the backyard or somewhere in the neighborhood. This is Southeastern Conference football. This is big boy football. Millions of dollars on the line, and people want to win, and alumni want to brag, and they want to hold up that big trophy from Hallelujah Land. There's a tremendous amount of pressure on this man. This man is on the hottest seat of all America. Anybody can find our seat anywhere. It's hot, and he's on it. But I'm going to tell you something. He's got to look over his shoulder because you got Bob Petrino there in the wings that is certainly well-certified that can take over that job and can do some good things down there, given the opportunity. We're going to see how it unfolds as the season unfolds, but I think this very well could be his last year unless the genius of Bob Petrino's offense saves him or whatnot and keep him on a little while longer. But we're going to find out when they had that Southeastern Conference showdown. And, you know, Keith Jackson would say, whoa, Nelly, y'all have a good one.
Appreciate it, Anthony. Go ahead, Dan.
Anthony made a great point, I don't think about the harm of Bobby Petrino succeeding at A&M because it feels like the harm of Bobby Petrino failing is a more clear and present danger to Jimbo Fisher. But yeah, how about that? I mean, what if it works and Bobby Petrino endears himself to all the A&M fans and Jimbo? You know what? That's a much better situation to be in.
If it works, Bobby's not going to be the head coach at A&M. I mean, Jimbo's not going to go anywhere. Here's the thing. If it doesn't work, if Jimbo is fired, it's because the offense doesn't work. And if the offense doesn't work, there's no way that I could see A&M saying, okay, we're moving on from Jimbo Fisher and Bobby Petrino's going to be the interim? No, I can't imagine that.
You rarely pay what they would have to pay to promote from within. Right, like you rarely.
Well, even for the rest of the season, I can't see them if it's not working unless Petrino is going behind Jimbo's back, and now he'd never do anything like that, and saying he's not letting me run my offense. Yeah. We'll win if I can run the offense. Then maybe he could be.
What's the line? What's the line in Pokes Al and Annie about her mama or her grandma? Right, the straight razor toting.
Yeah, the mean straight razor tote woman.
It's a mean, straight razor toting offensive coordinator, Bill. You never know what might be happening behind the scenes.
Yeah, that is again. Like I said a while ago, it's one of those things you're not going to be able to keep your eyes off because you know something's going to happen. It could be great. It could be gloriously bad. I mean,
so we haven't run any Brian Kelly today, and he answered a couple of questions that I think you could. I mean, these are answers that relate to Hugh Freeze and taking over the first year of a program that has championship expectations and the belief that things can be a lot better than they were very recently. So I'd love to, if we get the chance, maybe in the next segment, I'd love to run one or two of.
If you can go ahead and get it ready. I mean, we've got a little time here in this segment. So go ahead and do that while, once again, we're talking SEC Media Days up in Nashville. Today you had Missouri, LSU, and Texas A&M. Tomorrow, get started with Vandy. Clark Lee of Vandy will be up first tomorrow morning, followed by Georgia and Kirby Smart. Auburn up first in the afternoon tomorrow. 1 o'clock, I believe, is when Hugh Freeze goes to the big room. And, of course, Auburn will have Luke Deal, Cam Stutz, and Elijah McAllister there. And then wrapping things up tomorrow, Mississippi State and their new head coach, Zach Arnett. So that is all coming up tomorrow. So we'll have plenty of audio and folks that are covering from tomorrow. On Wednesday, Alabama gets it started. Nick Saban in the room first, followed by Sam Pittman in Arkansas, then Billy Napier in Florida. I think Wednesday is the big day because it's Mark Stoops wrapping it up. That is four. Wow. I think that is four coaches that people want to hear what all four of those have to say. So that's probably the highlights. Good way. Make folks stick around at least through Wednesday. But then, hey, not bad on Thursday either, as you got Lane Kiffin, Shane Beamer, and Josh Heupel.
Very nice.
So it's almost like we're sort of easing into it and trying to keep the media around through the end.
Yeah, I think it was deliberate to have Tennessee going on the last day, right? You know, that's a day where things.
Tennessee and South Carolina. I mean, and Ole Miss.
To have the home state school, Tennessee. Right? I know we're in Vanderbilt's city, but to have Tennessee going on the last day.
They know what
that's
like.
I think there'll be a lot of attention paid, and that's a day where it can start to feel like things are thinning out, or you're in the way staying on Radio Row on the fourth day of this thing. But with Tennessee going, I think it'll be pretty busy up to and including the end of this thing.
All right, I tell you what, we'll go ahead and get to our final break, and then when we come back, if we have the opportunity, run a little Brian Kelly, the LSU coach, as we continue winding it down here on the Monday Drive.
This is Lee County District
Attorney. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Final segment here on the Monday Drive. First day of SEC Media Days, and Dan up in Nashville. Of course, Jacob there with on the line, and Doug, both Doug Amos and Jacob joined Dan earlier on the drive there in Nashville. Doug, of course, there with the Max Roundtable from 11 to 2. You can hear all of those shows. So every day, 11 to 6, we have folks broadcasting live from Radio Row there at the Grand Hyatt in Nashville.
That's right. 7 straight hours of original programming. Catch right here on ESPNAU.com, ESPN 106.7 in the listening area. Looking forward. Tomorrow should be busy. It's Auburn Day. Lots of different storylines to get into there. Georgia Day as well. reigning back-to-back national champion, will be taking the podium. So, yeah, I imagine we'll have quite a bit to discuss about tomorrow's action, Bill.
Tomorrow may be a day where overall in the league you may have your media's preseason top and bottom three teams.
Could be.
I would not be shocked. Huh. Well, I heard Tony Barnhart on Jacob's show picking Auburn dead last in the West and saying that's where he thought the media very well could pick Auburn.
Yeah, you know, I don't really know what the projections are going to look like at the bottom. I think that with Auburn's very real question marks, you know, maybe that'll be enough for the media. And of course, you know, a couple of the teams that you'd be picking Auburn over are teams that beat Auburn last year, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, Ole Miss or Arkansas or Mississippi State, you know, whoever you would have last instead of Auburn in the West. You'd be talking about a team that won against Auburn. So, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see. You know, I think it'll be close between Auburn and State. But I wouldn't be surprised if the media chose Auburn as the seventh team in the SEC West.
All right, again, one of the teams that's going to get a lot of hype and getting a lot of hype is the LSU Tigers, winners of the SEC West a year ago. And, of course, Brian Kelly and his three of his players representing those Tigers today at Media Days.
Brian, obviously, every program is different, but what do you think are some of the factors that make for a successful transition year that like the one you guys had last season? What are some of maybe the intangibles that have worked well that have you seen in an early stage of a program?
Well, I think we had a good plan coming in, and the plan really started with understanding where the air was coming out of the tire. What were our problems? You know, you have to sit back and assess where are our problems. And most of our problems were self-inflicted wounds. You know, we had to clean up the things internally. We had to be more accountable. We had to have better attention to detail on a day-to-day basis. We had to be more committed to our academics. All those things carry over to what you do on the playing field. You're not going to forget your assignment. You're not going to miss out on the things that you're supposed to do in a timely fashion. So I think that's the first thing. And then you got to have your players clearly buy into that. And then hold them to that standard. A consistency of that approach is mandated. And if you don't, I don't think you can get that kind of quick transition.
Right side, third.
That was Brian Kelly, you know, answering a question earlier today about what it takes to step into a situation and what you sort of require in year one to turn things around.
Sounded like a familiar voice asking the question. So
that was Nathan. That was
I said, hey, Brian, that's Nathan. Yep. Huh? Yeah.
That's our buddy Nathan King, and maybe Nathan King pops onto this show at some point in the next couple of days. I know he's here at Media Days as well. Brian, what do you think of Kelly's answer as it pertains to, I mean, Hugh Freeze is going to sort of require a lot of that from his players in year one.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of truth to that. I really do. I don't think it's coach speak when he says things like that, especially you look at LSU and that program kind of fell apart, right, under the former coach, and had a lot of discipline issues, a lot of, you know, guys maybe not – doing everything on off the field, and that's not surprising.
Well, you need everybody on the same page.
Right. I don't know that the same problems existed for Auburn necessarily.
Not exactly the same problems, but you had sort of a disconnect,
yeah,
I think, between the coaches and players.
Yep. And I think the other difference is LSU had a bunch of talent and Auburn did not. So they had to make some drastic measures, mm-hmm. you know, overturning 50% of the roster. That's just a different process than LSU had to go through. LSU almost always has talent. If you just recruit the state of Louisiana decently, you're going to be loaded with great players, and that's the case with them again this year. Whereas Auburn, the recruiting has really been the biggest issue here, and that's what needed to be addressed.
Recruiting wasn't the primary issue with Ed Orgeron, right?
Like no, not at all.
The inability to recruit wasn't the problem, which is where, you know, this. Do we have time for a question about recruiting from Brian Kelly? I asked him.
Yeah, we got about a minute and a half.
All right, let's give this a let's see here if we have time for this. If not, I can I can save it for later in the week. We're not going to have time for Brian Kelly's answer. We'll do it tomorrow.
Okay, well that's great. I mean, there's so much stuff there, as you said. Auburn coming up tomorrow. Hey, they've got a little. They've got some activities planned for you guys as well. So I know you'll have a blast. It is. It's great hearing all the audio, getting a chance to, you know, hear the coaches and players. Like it's like. You know, like we've been saying, and like Anthony said, that means it's just about here.
It'd be great if we had that feeling of fall in the air, but that won't come for a couple months, right?
Hey, I tell you what, it was only 86 today.
That's not
it
bad.
It felt a whole lot better than it has the last few. Brian, thanks so much. One more time, let everybody know how they can keep up with everything.
Appreciate it. We have plenty of updates on recruiting, upcoming Big Cat Weekend, SEC Media Days, all that and more. AuburnSports.com. Follow me on Twitter or Threads at BMATAU.
All right, Brian Matthews, and again, it's always great having Brian here in the studio. Dan, don't have too much fun tonight. We're counting on you being back again tomorrow, okay?
I'm supposed to be on Hit That Line tomorrow at 7 a.m., Bill.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Oh, it's an all-nighter. Yeah, all-nighter.
Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Hope you're awake tomorrow afternoon at 4, that's all.
Yeah, I'm going to talk some Auburn tomorrow at 7 a.m. HitThatLine.com.
God,
yeah,
I got to find that.
We'll be here all week, guys. Can't wait.
All right, Dan. Thanks. Great stuff. Again, day one is done from SEC Media Days. You can hear 7 hours starting 11 o'clock with the Max Roundtable, followed by On the Line. And, of course, we're back with the drive tomorrow afternoon at 4 o'clock. Out of time here, though, on the Monday drive. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.